From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The small island nation of New Zealand this week announced a victory in the fight against the coronavirus, saying it had effectively eliminated it. A harsh four-week lockdown of the entire nation appears to have borne fruit, as only one new case was reported this week. New Zealand's popular Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern described the lockdown as, quote, the strictest constraints placed on New Zealanders in modern history. By taking swift and strong action early on, New Zealand is now set to reopen its economy cautiously, with hundreds of thousands of people returning to work. But some restrictions will remain in place. Overall, the nation of 5 million reported 1,472 infections and 19 deaths related to the coronavirus. We go now to New Zealand to speak with Maria Armudian. She is a senior lecturer at the University of Auckland and the author of two books, Kill the Messenger, The Media's Role in the Fate of the World, and Reporting from the Danger Zone. She's an American citizen living in New Zealand. Welcome to the program, Maria.
Oh, it's great to be with you again, Sonali.
So the view from the United States to the rest of the world is these days one of deep envy, as we, you know, have 50,000 plus Americans having died from the virus. We are leading the world this time in death. But there are countries like the one that you are in, New Zealand, that have really led the way on tackling the coronavirus. Can you give me a sense of, you know, as someone living in New Zealand, what your assessment is of how your government has handled this issue? It sounds like they actually had a plan, something the US doesn't even have.
Well, I would say that it was a changing plan. So a few things to consider. One is that New Zealand had the benefit of being at the bottom of the, you know, Pacific Ocean, and the benefit of being far enough away that we got to see what was happening in the rest of the world for quite a long time before having to make our own decisions. The other benefit from being an island nation that really is not close to anything is that once you make a decision to lock down and to close the borders, that's it. You know, people are not getting in. So there were a few things that benefited in that way. A third thing, I think, is once the decision was made, and I'll talk about that in just a second, to lock down the country, it's already not a very densely populated country. You've got 5 million people. They're spread out across two islands. There are a couple of urban centers where there was some spread within some clusters, but it's the benefit of being spread out like this also makes it harder to transmit a virus like coronavirus. So what happened is, as the other countries were suffering and New Zealand was tracking it, we started to see what was happening. I think it was January 24th when New Zealand first started to say, oh, we need to pay attention to this, and started to think about what restrictions might need to be put into place. We were given quite a few warnings that this might happen and to be prepared for a lockdown. There was quite a debate among the scholars who were writing opinion pieces, and they were not in agreement. There were some scholars that were saying, lock it down now before it's too late. There were some scholars who were saying, no, do treat it more like Sweden is treating it. But in the end, Jacinda Ardern and her cabinet decided that the most important thing to do would be to lock down the country for 4 weeks. And it was a hard lockdown, meaning you don't leave your house with the exception of going to get medicine or food or taking a walk. Don't leave your neighborhood. Can't go out of your neighborhood for food. No restaurants are open. The only thing you can do is go to a grocery store. And those had such limited times when you'd have to wait with social distancing and a big long line in order to get into the grocery store in many cases. So people just didn't, you know, when faced with the issues here. Now, at the same time, knowing that this was going to take a big hit, the country did a $12 billion package to support health, business, employment, other types of emergencies. So,
and considering the size of New Zealand, that's a pretty generous amount.
It is pretty generous, yeah. And, you know, we'll see what happens as we start to go back. I mean, we've just left level four a few days ago. As of Tuesday, which was your Tuesday, not our Tuesday, we had a total of 19 deaths. And we had only two new cases. So it has really diminished considerably, again, with the benefits of being an island nation far away, but also with a hard lockdown.
What about testing? We had a conversation with Christine on about South Korea, and what South Korea did was very aggressive testing, yeah. And constant testing, and testing every traveler that came into the nation. Yeah. Did New Zealand do aggressive testing?
We have not been as aggressive. You remember South Korea had the benefit of having dealt with the SARS virus before, and New Zealand just didn't have that kind of an epidemic before. This is the first time the country has shut its borders, I think, in its history.
So if it had all of these advantages compared to, say, other nations in terms of being an island, in terms of being sparsely populated and coming to it later, were there approaches that the government took that you think could apply to other nations, in particular your home country of the United States?
Look, I think the hard lockdown was the right thing to do. You know, there will be more people coming back in who are New Zealanders who've been abroad that they are now allowing to slowly come in. And we may end up with more cases as a result of that. And I think the rule of two-week quarantine and testing for new people coming in is an important one. It's one that they're doing now.
Right. But, that's what South Korea did. Every person coming into the country, whether they were positive or not, had to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes. So that was something that New Zealand took up as we started to see what was happening. And at first it was, you know, a little bit more casual about it until they realized that it was starting to spread in the country itself. That's when I have to give credit to the government, to Jacinda Ardern, our prime minister, and taking advice and going, look, worst case scenario is pretty bad and we can't do that. And the other thing I think that's different in the United States versus a country like New Zealand is we've got a public health care system. And so that means everybody is going to get health care if there are enough providers, enough hospitals, enough. And to overload a health care system means that you have to pick and choose who gets to live and die. And I don't think the country wanted to be in that position.
So when we look at the United States and how it has bungled this so badly, do you feel that we were sort of poised to be where we are today, leading the world in the number of infections and the number of deaths, a patchwork of private and public healthcare systems, the worst possible president at the worst possible time, who's basically said to states, you're on your own?
Yeah. Look, I think the worst situation in the United States, well, are two things. One is you're absolutely right. You've got really terrible leadership. You can't even call it leadership, really. This is a man who does not have any respect for science, for facts, for realities, and has lived his life violating laws. So it's, you know, it's kind of no wonder that he would leave it in this way to the states. But that's also that leaving it to the states is a bit of a kind of a mantra of the hard conservatives. So he's just completely bungled it with that. Look, if this infection, this coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic has taught the United States anything, I hope it is that we need a healthcare system. Because one person gets it, everybody can get it. And, you know, if anything, it has validated all of the arguments that, say, for example, Bernie Sanders has brought forward for Medicare for All. That, I hope, becomes one of the priorities in the upcoming, hopefully new administration.
What is your assessment of Jacinda Ardern's communication style during this pandemic? You know, we've seen Trump giving these coronavirus press briefings at the White House. They've been just almost unbearable to watch, you know, filled with misinformation, filled with self-congratulation, and a lot of braggadocio, a lot of boasting of how well everything's going, in complete contrast to the reality of people dying at larger numbers and rates than any other nation. Is that in stark contrast to New Zealand's leadership?
I would say yes. I mean, look, you know, who knew? If you would have asked me years ago that the United States would have at the president somebody like this, I wouldn't have believed you, of course. But yeah, Jacinda Ardern, look, she has come up as a policy person. She worked in the parliament before she became an elected leader and became prime minister. She was chosen by her party in part because she's a great communicator, in part because she's a good policy person. She takes these things into consideration. She's thoughtful. She's sensitive. She knows about the suffering of people. She wants to address it. She wants to represent the entire nation and not one segment of a nation like your president does. Your president, my president. And so it is quite a contrast. And you can see it in her. I mean, she just talks to you like she's talking to a human being. It's not a, as you call it, braggadocio. She doesn't take false credit. I mean, he takes false credit and he takes credit for things that aren't even true. So it's pretty awful. I mean, look, I think the primary job of a country's leader is to keep its citizens safe and well. And it's, if anything tests a country's leader, it would be something like this pandemic. And on all of those counts, it's obvious that Donald Trump has been a profound failure. And it's hard to, again, it's hard to compare. We've got completely different governance systems. We've got a parliament here and a prime minister as opposed to a president with a Congress. But it's still, yeah, I mean, in terms of being the country spokesperson and being able to talk to the people of New Zealand, she's been very good.
In fact, we've seen these anti-lockdown protests here in the United States, many of them taking essentially direction from Trump, from Republicans, some even state-level Republicans and lawmakers who have even said that it's worth reopening the economy, even if we lose lives. These people are casting the quarantines as an infringement of their constitutional rights. Yep. So again, contrasting with Jacinda Ardern, as somebody, a leader who communicated clearly to people, did she successfully get that buy-in from the public? Because when you have a four-week lockdown, that is kind of severe.
It's kind of severe. So there, I would say yes and no. There were violations because the lockdown was so severe, you know, even her health minister was caught violating it. So, I mean, so yes, she had some buy-in. But there was also law enforcement here. The people were getting cited and fined, and in, I think, one case, jailed if they violated the lockdown in any kind of a severe way in the latter case. So you don't have much of that in the United States, I don't think. And I think it is left to the municipalities and the states for that. There's something else I wanted to say, which is I just saw a study and passed it on to my students about how mediated information can cost lives. And it was directly looking at the...
Right. This is something you teach. This is something you've written about, the power of the media to influence society.
And this particular article that was written by some economists in Illinois looked at the messaging at Fox News and how people who bought into that there was no real concern about this, it actually ended up costing their lives in some cases. I can't give you the numbers on that at the moment. But that this kind of information, which you are referring to with this coming directly from the president, directly from some of these large audience cable TV programs, it is going to cost lives, and it has already cost lives. This is a dereliction of duty. It's a dereliction of duty both from political leadership, and it's dereliction of duty for media, because media also have ethical duties to provide accurate information. Yeah, so you've got some problems over there. And we get that stuff here too, but
sure.
You know, there, yeah. Oh, one other thing that New Zealand did that was harsh and people complained about it is that people turned each other in for violations.
Wow, snitches.
Yeah, there was a snitch call-in line.
Wow.
So there were measures taken to enforce the law in addition to having the law. So it wasn't, like what I was trying to say, is it wasn't just persuasion. There was enough persuasion, but then there was shaming and actual law enforcement measures that went along with it.
And for the government to have essentially declared the virus eliminated, I'm wondering if you feel that people, you know, sort of look back and say, all right, maybe it was worth the pain.
That is, I mean, I tend to think that that's the case. I don't think any country has a uniform opinion on these kinds of things. I think we tend to take our health for granted when we're feeling good. It's only when you're sick that you go, oh, this really sucks. So only in contrast with other countries will people start to think that way, I think. So when, if in fact, the countries that have been a little bit looser, say Sweden, if they continue to have the escalating numbers and contrast that with something like New Zealand, then I think people will appreciate their government here a little bit more and the actions that it took.
It's incredible. I mean, we still know so little about this virus. It's like we're conducting these grand state level experiments and seeing how the outcomes are. So speaking of experiments, what about just basing decision making on science? How clearly?
Yeah, how about that?
Right. How much did New Zealand's leadership allow science to take the lead and sort of say that to the public as well, unlike here in the US?
Yeah. So look, like I said, there was a pretty robust discussion even in the media here in opinion pieces in which epidemiologists were arguing on different sides, some arguing sort of the Swedish model and some arguing, no, lock it down and lock it down hard. So, you know, even on something like this, it's clearly it was scientifically based, but I think this pandemic is so new and so unusual that we still don't know enough. As you were just saying a little while ago, we still don't know enough to know which model is going to be right. So why not go the safe route rather than the sorry route? And that's what I feel like they did here.
Now, there have been some media outlets that have made a big deal of the fact that women-led countries have tended to do better worldwide on the coronavirus pandemic. I'm sometimes skeptical of these notions because there have been plenty of women leaders that have been just as oppressive and foolish as male leaders. But is there anything that is to be made of that, you think?
You know, I haven't really looked deeply at the studies, but it has certainly seemed to be the case when you take those. You'd have to kind of really look at it as apples to apples, as opposed to, you know, comparing a banana to an apple. But certainly the argument was there and it looked to be true. I will say this, when women are in positions of power, issues that normally would get maybe not addressed, especially when they affect women, tend to get addressed more. So there have been studies even in the US Congress that show women's issues don't get addressed until there are women in Congress, many of them anyway.
And it's a numbers game though, right? I mean, the more women there are in positions of leadership, the more likely it is to have women's issues be centered.
Yeah, and you know, there are many studies around the sort of gendered nature of a variety of issues. It's just, when does it get onto the agenda and then what ends up being the priority? And I, you know, women, I think maybe are a little bit closer to the health and well-being and sensitivities around that. I don't know if that's true. That's just my guess.
And then going back to what you were saying earlier about the economic impact of the coronavirus in New Zealand, you said that there was a government relief program to the tune of $12 billion. But everything was shut down besides grocery stores and I'm assuming, you know, medical centers. Yep. That means if restaurants were shut down, the restaurant industry must have been hit hard. We've seen some countries in, say, Europe that have really boosted their safety net, have provided even, you know, direct income to people, paying them to stay home. How badly was New Zealand's economy battered and how well do you foresee it recovering?
Oh boy. So the big problem in New Zealand is going to be that it relies heavily on tourism. And so, I mean, its economy is built on farming and tourism, a little bit of wine, a little bit of forestry, fishing. So it's not exactly the most environmentally friendly economy in the world. And it's going to get hit extraordinarily hard as long as those borders are closed. And I don't know for how long that'll last, but the government is definitely trying to at least alleviate the pain on the short term. The restaurants now are going to be able to open just for takeout. They were closed completely for 4 weeks plus, I think, 2 days. Now we can get some takeout as long as we honor the social distancing. But again, you know, that is a limitation. I think it's going to take a long time. I think we're going to have an economy globally that is going to suffer massively from this epidemic, from this pandemic.
Well, Maria, it's always a pleasure to have you on our program. I have to say, I'm a little envious of you having moved to New Zealand. Well, when the lockdown is over, that would be lovely.
Come here, come stay. Yeah, I got plenty of room for you.
Thank you so much, as always, Maria. Really appreciate it.
It's a great pleasure.
My guest has been Maria Armudian, senior lecturer at the University of Auckland. She's written 2 books, Kill the Messenger, The Media's Role in the Fate of the World, and Reporting from the Danger Zone. We've been discussing how New Zealand's approach to the coronavirus contrasts with the US's. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.